Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. Got a lot going on today's show, a lot going on this week. We will get Paul Keels, the play-by-play voice of Ohio State, on. Just a question of Paul and I working out which day, but we will get to it. And then we will have Jack Ham on, because I will force him to. And it's just a question now of which day. Tony Knopp, CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management, on today, later in the week. Today, Donnie Collins will join us, Grand Times Tribune. Matt Leon today on the Eagles' loss yesterday. Meanwhile, Gentle Ben out again. Quarterback has no durability, Doug.
Stepped out of that play yesterday, Stephen. Think, okay, not that big a deal. Been there. He's done that before. Little did we know. Yeah.
Well, they cleaned it. They did not. It's not a repair. It's a cleaning. It sounds to me that the door might be open to missing the Patriots game, having the bye week, and the Patriots game might be the one he misses. That he could be back in time for the Ravens game.
That's what I've been hearing too.
So the timing of the bye week is going to work to the Steelers' favor. Because right now, I mean, with Landry Jones at quarterback, they're 212-point underdogs.
I thought it was more like a 12-point underdog, but
submit might for me. Might as well be 200.
I hear you. I just found out a little while ago that maybe this would have been John Norwig's call yesterday, because one question I heard was, okay, if you had that injury, then why did you go back into play? Well, from what I just read this a little while ago, that there is no way he could have been injured anymore had he gone back into play. So that's why he went back into play yesterday.
Oh, okay. Okay. I can't be injured anymore.
He couldn't have done any further damage. Going back into play, he wouldn't have damaged it any further. The knee, that is. So I'm kind of wondering if that was a John Norwig call on that. But it was team doctors.
Well, he's a trainer.
Right.
I think you defer to the doctor on that one.
Yeah.
You know, athletic trainers are really, really good. Really, really good.
Well, he's truly one of the best for sure.
Right. But there's certain calls the doc has to make.
I was getting a little worried, too. At the end of the game, they were starting to kind of, you know, toss him around like a rag doll. And I saw another story, too. The very last play of the game that he was in hurt the other knee.
Like, tremendous.
Yeah, so he had like ice on both of his knees in the locker room, the post-game interview.
Great.
I said the exact same thing in my mind, but added a few more.
I mean, I got to give your team credit. I got to give your team a lot of credit. They stunk yesterday.
They did. O-line was bad. D-line was terrible. They're back to having a very poor effort of tackling.
And now they're back to having the first overall pick in the draft.
And when... No. I had a feeling you'd go there, but I didn't think it'd be a couple minutes in. I thought you'd wait a little while. But when Ben was out, Landry was in there, and a third and one. You give it to Bell. Then on a third and one, you pass it. It's like, why? It's like, My head was scratching on that one. It's like, why would you do it there? You could have gained.
But this is going to go back to what I've talked about many, many times. I've had a lot of Steeler fans tell me, you know, that the best player on the team is Antonio Brown. Now, this is not to diminish a great, great player. He is a great, great player. The best player on the team is Ben Roethlisberger. How effective is Antonio Brown going to be with Landry Jones at quarterback? No facilitator, no effectiveness. I mean, how effective is Antonio Brown going to be as a player with Ben Roethlisberger out? Roethlisberger's their best player. I've said that for a long time now. And that's not to disparage in any way, shape, or form the greatness of Antonio Brown, who is a legitimately great, great player. I mean, just every team would love to have him. Every team would love to have him. I mean, you can argue he's the best receiver in the game. And you couple in him as a punt returner. But he's not the best player on his own team. If he's out, Roethlisberger is just going to throw it other places. If Roethlisberger's out, Antonio Brown becomes exponentially less effective.
I'll give Miami a ton of credit. I mean, they were doubling up on Brown yesterday, and then you got Sammy Coates, who has two busted fingers on one hand, so he didn't get a catch yesterday.
And Miami's not good. That's a bad loss. Don't sugarcoat it. Okay?
Oh, I'm not.
You know what I mean? Come on. I feel like I'm dealing with the other guy in this show now. It's like, come on. You guys weren't.
I think I'd ever hear you say that to me. Oh, man.
Oh, the suit was one big excuse after another.
But you'll never have to talk me off a ledge. That's the difference between the two of us here.
No, remember when Le'Veon Bell got hurt?
Yes.
Who the heck started a tailback for them?
D'Angelo Williams.
No. This is in the playoff game.
Fitz Toussaint, wasn't it?
No. I'm talking about a couple years ago.
Okay.
It was like 2 years ago. They were playing. I think they were playing.
Was that the Saturday Baltimore
Ravens?
Game?
Yeah, the Ravens game.
Oh,
Saturday.
Man, they pulled in. They signed someone who used to be with the Browns. I forget.
Yeah, but it wasn't him. It was the guy that was on the roster all season who had like six carries. Okay. Right? And the suit's on here saying, no, he's a really good player. Is it really good? Yeah. He's got 290 carries. He's got six. You're telling me that, I mean, even they know he's not good. They won't put him in the game.
That's a reach.
And that was the suit. Now, by the way, it was good to hear the suit back on.
It was.
That was really good. To have him back on Saturday.
Yep.
So.
Yep, we'll get a Bucknell recap from Joe Susan here at 3:35.
Right, we'll do that. Get that coming up today.
Yep.
But, by the way, the Penn State-Purdue game's a noon kick. So people know. That'll be at Ross-Ade Stadium with a new coach, by the way. Daryl Hazel got fired on Sunday. So, they've made changes. And they play at Nebraska this week. That's the one thing that Penn State will get out of this coaching change. Because Penn State saw three of these last year. And in all three of them, the interim coach, Penn State, was the first team to face them. Where now you're looking around saying, okay, what are they going to do now? They went 2-1 in those games.
That's right. That was Rutgers last year, Illinois, and...
Yes.
Yes.
No, it was Rutgers, it was Maryland, and it was Georgia.
Okay. Well, I remember the Illinois game. Bill Cubitt was the interim at that point.
Yeah, but, I mean,
He had a few. That's right. He already had a few games under his belt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've got these games. At least they'll see what they're going to try to do. And at least get a feel for what they're trying to do. As opposed to some guesswork. I mean, the biggest one was, I remember Maryland, you're like, you're looking at the tape saying, okay, I'm looking at personnel, but I have no idea what they're going to do. None. Zero. So we'll find out. It'll be, but that's a week. So they've got Nebraska first, and that's going to be a tough one. So, for Purdue. I listened to some of the Purdue game on Saturday. Then I watched a little bit when I had a chance. I'm like, hey, what a fourth quarter. I'm like, yeah, I'm sure Iowa's backups were taking it seriously at that point. But, yeah, he's out at Purdue. And that is, so they change. I mean, I don't quite get the change in midseason thing. I don't see, what does that accomplish? I don't know what it accomplishes changing in midseason. It's not like you're going to change the fortunes and here we go. You know, we'll change the fortunes of this thing midseason like this. Because the people that are going to be in charge of this, I mean, let's be honest about it. I mean, none of them are going to get a job at Purdue. The staff is out. I mean, they're going to hire somebody that's not going to be on the staff.
And they'll want to. Then he'll want to bring in his guys.
Right. Gerard Parker is going to be the coach for the remainder of the season. Okay. That's fine. I mean, so that's what they're going to do. And I'm sure, obviously this is a person on the staff that everybody knows and so forth. But, I mean, keep in mind, at Purdue, they have a new athletic director there. It's not, Morgan Burke's now gone. Mike Budzinski's now there. And Babinski announced that he's going to take over. And they'll go from there. But you're going to have, I mean, let's face it, you're still going to have a point on the staff where they're all professional. They're going to obviously get ready for the game and things like that, and I'm sure they'll do a fine job. But at the same time, can you blame them for not wanting to send out feelers and resumes as the season goes? Now, Parker has been the recruiting coordinator there. Spent his first two seasons there as the tight ends coach, then he became the wideout coach last year. Okay. Like I said, we'll get our first look at it coming up this weekend. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, and News Radio 1070 WKOK.
You just don't think about insurance. You buy a home, you take out a policy, and you forget about it until something happens and you need it. Then you think about insurance a lot. My agent recommended insurance from Selective. Insurance for our home and property, jewelry, even the food in our refrigerator. Selective thinks about everything, so I don't have to.
Selective. Response is everything. Get to know us at Selective.com.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Purdy Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at PurdyInsurance.com. Find out what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Great to have you with us. Matt Leon today on the Eagles. Donnie Collins on Penn State football. Joe Susan today talking about Bucknell football. It's all coming up on the show today. Nigel Hayes. I'll get into this a little bit more when I have a little more time. Did you see any of... I guess he was near the game day set. Sign that said broke student athletes need money, something like that. Which is, by the way, it's something that he has campaigned about before. I believe his name is in the Kessler lawsuit. You have to have a current student athlete's name on there. And he doesn't, you know, and his name is on it. Let's see. It says broke college athlete. The sign said broke college athlete. Anything helps. Let's see. His point is the conference will pull in $440 million per year to broadcast football and basketball starting next year. Wisconsin, as well as every other Big Ten school, will get about $40 million of that directly. Under Armour now paying about $10 million a year to Wisconsin. They broke out their brand new unis the other night. And Nigel Hayes had a sign saying that he's a broke college athlete. It is an interesting discussion point I want to get into before the show is over with, because the dollars are huge. The operating budget of Wisconsin, about $122 million, which is larger than the budget of the city of Green Bay. It's true. Now, they pay for staff, travel, facilities, meals, marketing, medical coverage, tuition bills, including stipends. The staff budget is about $1.1 million for the athletic director, Barry Alvarez, about $2.3 million for the head football coach, Paul Christ, $1.75 million for Greg Gard, the basketball coach. And the Wisconsin Athletic Department is going to transfer $11.5 million to the university because of all the cuts in state funding they've had. This Hayes brings up some interesting points. It's, you know, and Nigel Hayes, first of all, you've never talked to him, Sean, but he's very thoughtful, intelligent young man. And this is not, he's not some Johnny come lately where, hey, I'm just going to jump on the bandwagon. He's talked about this for 3 years now. I believe he got his name on the Kessler lawsuit 2 years ago. So he's always been involved in this, and he took time at the Final Four. The 2 years that Wisconsin went to the Final Four, he took the time at each one to talk about the student athlete and money being brought in. Now, I think most people know that while being thoughtful about it, there's some parts of it that I'm not buying. And you're saying, well, Nigel Hayes is going to be a professional basketball player. Nigel Hayes is going to be a professional basketball player, but he's not going to be an NBA player. He is a tweener in the classic sense of the word. And he is either going to be playing in Europe or else he's in the D-League. It's going to be one of the two. He's not going to be a high-level NBA player, despite the fact that he is an outstanding college basketball player. The fact that he's a tweener means he doesn't translate to the NBA. And that's just an assessment. I mean, you know, I'm going to be... I've watched a few games in my lifetime, so you kind of know where people fit.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to PurdyInsurance.com. Joe Susan in just a moment here. But first of all, time for this day in sports history. And very quickly, a couple notes. Willie Park, who designed the Penn State White Course, won his first professional golf tournament held in Scotland in 1860. And yes, Willie Park did design the Penn State White Course. He did so about 5 years before his death, he finished it. Let's see, 1962, the Yankees won the World Series, beat the Giants. Willie McCovey line drive right to Bobby Richardson to end it. 1968, Bob Beamon, 29 feet, 2.5 inches, long jump. That was a record for decades. All right, that's this day in sports history. Bring in Joe Susan now, the head football coach at Bucknell. Joe, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Who was the shortstop for the Yankees in 62?
I want to say it was Tommy Tresh.
Tommy Tresh,
and Tony, was the shortstop, replacing
third
Tony
base.
Kubek. Third base would have been Cleve Boyer.
First base?
First base, was that still Moose Scourin?
It was either Moose or Joe Pepitone.
Pepitone, yeah.
Moose.
Yeah, Pepitone, though, then came on after that.
And then Maris.
Was it right? Mantle. And who's the left fielder?
Good question.
Boy, I don't know who the left fielder was.
No, it wasn't Roy White yet, was it?
No, not at that point. Because remember that when Mazeroski hit the home run in 60, they already put Yogi Berra in left field because he was the left fielder in that play.
Yep. Yogi. You ever stand next to Yogi?
He's small, man. He was only like 5'7", 5'8".
Yeah, he was at one of our bowl games with
was he really?
Gandolfini. They were standing together, and I went up to say hello. Good person, really engaging. What a great hitter.
Knew who he was. How about that?
Yep.
Just a good guy who knew who he was.
Yep.
You're a tough one on Saturday, without question. Talk about the freshman quarterback. John had to step into that game, make his debut. What do you like about him?
You know, the thing that he did when he stepped in there is he did what he does in practice. He goes in, very confident kid, strong arm, very good athlete. And it's funny because his first snap goes over his head, and we're faced with a 2nd and 20 right off the bat. And he comes back and makes a great throw on a naked bootleg. And he has the advantage in that he was in prep school for a year out of high school, so a little bit older than a true freshman. But he's got the quality that is unshakable. And sometimes that's a blessing for a freshman quarterback. Sometimes that's a curse for a
sure.
freshman quarterback because he thinks he can get it in anywhere. And I was really impressed by how he managed it, and some of the throws he made were really good, and some of the throws he made were in pretty difficult situations in terms of pressure. And we go in this week. RJ Nitti is back to being 100%. And what I did yesterday is I told both quarterbacks we're going to split reps, and it's going to be a competition that we'll make a decision later in the week, but to have two of them ready to go. And obviously RJ has the merit of his experience, and John Chironzio has the merit of going in a pretty hard situation and performing. So it's going to be an interesting week for the head coach, let alone those quarterbacks.
No question about that. He also had a drive where you got it down the field. The kicking part of it, eventually you're going to have a really good kicking situation, but how tough have the growing pains been and what has it done for your decision-making as to what to do with it when the situation arises?
You know, when it winds up being a short field goal, I feel very confident, and it's funny because I watched him kick it. My big concern is he doesn't have the elevation that Alex Peachin has, and he got it up, and it looked like it was going through, so I took my eyes off it for a second, and then the next thing I saw was it bouncing off the upright. And, you know, those are the things that when you get down there and you don't produce points in a drive where you've driven the field, from a momentum standpoint, it could potentially really have a negative impact on you. Obviously, from a point-counting standpoint, it does. But it was good to see our defense hold them, and then our offense came back and drove the length of the field. But you know, we had it 13-7 deep into the fourth quarter.
Right.
But Colgate did a great job of burning the clock, which is what they do on their in their offense, and that's really what we do when we're functioning correctly. But it was more a function of we had trouble with their pass rush early in the game. Obviously, it led to Matt Mew suffering a lower leg injury. What that does for us, it takes our punter away, and Brett Berg stepped in and did an outstanding job. I think he averaged 40 yards and two punts. So it, you know, those are the scenarios that you have to be prepared for, and it was good to see our kids be that way. Obviously, you want to come out of that game with a win. We didn't. And what I told my team after the game is that rarely in this league does anybody go through undefeated. It's just we put ourselves in a position where we have to from now on. And, you know, it's true. You look at the league schedule at the or the league record at the end of the year, and usually somebody's been beaten by somebody. You know, it's not a 6-0, or it's usually a 5-1 or a 4-2 that wins the league.
You get this thing back to 13-7 after the experience at Holy Cross, where they had come back. What did you sense on your sideline from your kids? Was that there that sense? Okay, who's going to make that play? Who's going to make the play?
That's how it was, and it's funny because we get that thing to 13-7, and we're getting ready to kick off, and the young quarterback comes over, and he's pumping up the kickoff team, which is exciting to see. You know, he's an excitable kid, and it's just. We had the opportunity with the score being down six. We had the opportunity with the ball twice and really didn't convert. And you know, obviously, those opportunities with a team like Colgate who can bleed the clock like they do, you know, they become more and more precious. And you know, they took over with the ball with about 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter and drove the length of the field and gave it back to us with under 5 minutes left, and then you got to go right into your 2 minute offense because you're down 20-7 at that time.
Youth is a disease, but it can be cured. What are a couple of the growing pains that you're seeing in a young football team, and what are some of the things that you're getting signs of that show that you're advancing?
Well, the thing that is the experience, a game experience of a young man like Justin Bethea, who's a freshman and going to be a very good receiver. We actually played a freshman strong safety, John Fox, who really did a good job for what we asked him to do. Those are the things that you know, give you some feel that we've got a chance moving forward. It's just we got to be able to keep them healthy. You know, Chad Freshnock got some hard yards. Every yard was hard against Colgate's front. We do get Joe Lauro back. He'll actually play free safety he'll play strong safety, and we're going to make Brett Berg the permanent free safety, and then we get Connor Golden back. So we've changed four spots in the secondary in 2 weeks, basically, and it's good to have that crew back together. We have Brian Marine, Joe Lauro, Brett Berg, Connor Golden, and Nick O'Brien, and Lafayette's going to throw the football. They made a living on throwing the football so far this year. We've got to be able to balance our attack, and we didn't run the ball as effectively as we had to against Colgate. And, you know, that plays into where they want you on third down. They just pin their ears back. They have some really good pass rushers. Number 37, Afree, he's an impressive kid. Built real thick through the lower body, long arms. Reminds me of two of the better defensive ends that I've been able to coach against at other places. A young man named Dwight Freeney.
Heard of him.
Yeah, and then kid from Louisville. I forget his name.
Dumerville?
Elvis, yep. Elvis was in the house a couple of times.
That's right.
But they got, you know, they're short kids, but they have long arms, and they use those levers, and that's what a free is. A free is not a six-footer like Elvis and Dwight are. He's more a 6'1", 6'2 kid, but plays with that kind of pad level.
You talk about the secondary. What does it mean to you getting a group that is back together, that has a little veteran presence, and what does it mean to the overall communication of your defense against a good pass team, which is really critical?
I think it's really important in that we can do some things that we were hesitant to do with some of the younger guys in there. And I think what that'll lead to is more opportunities with the ball. And that's a big thing. We turned the ball over once against Colgate. They didn't turn it over at all. We've got to get back to creating some turnovers, whether it's in the run or the pass. But I think having that group back and the game savvy that a young man like Connor Golden has, and Joe Lauro being the invert player at strong safety, he's a very physical player. And then Brett Berg is just, he does so many things for us. From a communication standpoint, I think it makes a lot of the nonverbal communication something you take not for granted, but it's going to happen. And it's like an offensive line. You know, you get used to five guys playing together. Same way in the secondary, you get used to five guys playing together, you can be pretty good.
Joe, it's going to be 1 o'clock on Saturday at Mathewson against Lafayette. Best of luck. Thanks so much for the time again today.
I had a privilege of seeing Kevin Herr, and he looks good.
Yes. And, yeah, he does.
He told me he does have an aversion to bacon now. And he said he has a passion for rolling in mud pits, but it's good to see him moving around. And good man, and really has become a close friend. And I thank you for your coverage, and I know that you'll be busy with Penn State, Ohio State this weekend. That should be a good one.
Should be, but as you know, my heart's always there when you guys are playing. I'm always checking out, making sure where you are in every game, and you know that.
Thank you, Steve. You've got to get you on the sideline one of these days.
Yeah, I'm going to do what I can to get there one of these pretty soon.
All right. Thank you, Steve. You guys have a great day.
Thanks, Joe.
Take care. Bye.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. That's a good football coach, a good man who understands football, understands the value of a college education, and hits all the right notes that I want in my coach. All of them. And the man knows how to win. He's growing something there. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Boy, both Shikellamy and Sealands Grove both won. Heading to week 9. Wow. We were both praising the work of Mike Ferlazzo during the break. Very impressive.
If Mike crushed it on a Friday night, Shikellamy will be taking on Loyal Sock this Friday night here on WKOK. Sealands Grove will be in the Silver Bowl with Mount Carmel area. Of course, that'll be over on Eagle 107 with Pat Ryan and Zach. Pat and Ryan will be calling their 100th Seals game on Friday night.
Well, I want to pay tribute to the two of them. They both do great job. What a great job Pat and Ryan do. Congratulations.
Ironically enough, the first game they did in 2009, which was, of course, the year of the state championship run for Sealands Grove, was Sealands Grove and Mount Carmel. And 100 will be Sealands Grove and Mount Carmel again.
That's great. Congratulations, Pat and Ryan. What a great run. Great respect for the work they do. And Mike doing great. I mean, it's great to have somebody on the air that wants to be there. I mean, it's great.
What are you getting at?
Now, I think I've told this story before about George Lapidus. I've told this story before, haven't I? From the Memphis Statesman, did radio in Memphis for years. Dick Girardi went to the Writers Hall of Fame, and I went down to Dallas for the ceremony. And one of the other people going into the hall was George Lapidus from Memphis. In fact, it was really nice. Now, this is the day of the UConn-Kentucky championship game, the one that UConn won. And Calipari came down the day of the game following Mass to spend a few minutes with George. Like, I'm talking, I mean a few minutes, like maybe 15, 20 minutes with him at the breakfast. And the, and to make a long story short, George Lapidus has a rare disease that's going to kill him. It's a lung disease. And he'd been doing this for 42 years. And he said that when he was in Memphis, he was actually covering the city beat. And he developed a really great rapport with the mayor. He had developed a great rapport with the city council. He really liked his job. And one day, the editor of the paper brings him in. And he says, George, we're going to shift you over to sports. He goes, nah, I really don't want to do that. He says, you know, I really like my job doing the city beat. And, you know, I like working with, you know, doing stories with the mayor and so forth. I think it's really great. And he wrote down a number and he handed it to him. And he says, so what day do you want me to start in the sports? As the sports editor. Great. So now he's trying to feel his way through the sports world. And one of the first events he covers is the Masters. So he goes over from Memphis to Augusta National. And he sees the legendary writer Red Smith sitting there. So he goes up to Red Smith and he says to him, Mr. Smith, my name is George Lapidus. I'm now at the Memphis Statesman. He said, I'm just getting started with this thing. I'd covered news for a few years. He says, but now I'm really getting started with sports. And he says, can you give me any advice at all that could help me? Red Smith looked at him. He said, I got two words. He said, two very important words. Be there. Be there. Well, Mike, you're there. No. Suit, not there. Oh, we're having fun at the suit's expense. But that was his advice. I mean, and that's, I'll tell you something I got. I was really disappointed in something today. You know, I teach class, right? And
how were the kids this morning? How'd it go?
I mean, they're fine. They're for the most part, good kids. But the Ohio State Network needed somebody to run a sound mic, a parab on the sideline, and then needed somebody then, when that was done, to go into the Penn State media room and get James Franklin sound and so forth. Okay. And Skip Mosick, who does a great job at Ohio State, is trying to set this whole thing up. I said, Skip, I'll ask my class. I'll see, you know, I said, we'll get somebody. And you know what my confidence level was that I would get somebody out of 10 kids?
Oh, I would think none. It'd be through the roof. Oh, really?
Wow. No, it was none. And I had no confidence I would get anybody.
Hmm.
And you know what? I asked the class, and not one person raised their hand. That bothers me. Now, is this a glamour job to stand there all night holding up a parab sound mic on the sideline? No. Might there be a shower? Maybe. Is it a glamour job to go into the Penn State media room and get some sound from James Franklin? That's a little bit better part of it. But I did not believe that there would be one person that would want that job when I asked. And it bothered me feeling that way, and then they confirmed it. When I was their age, I was aching at any opportunity I could get.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, any opportunity. And I don't understand this. That's one area with the quote, younger generation I struggle with. Where are the hungry go-getters? You know, you've got to do, sometimes you have to do 3 to 5 years of whatever you can work, and some of it's lousy work, in order to have yourself a 40 to 50 year career of doing what you want to do. I mean, I was doing play-by-play of Penn State basketball at a young age, but I didn't become the play-by-play voice of Penn State football until I was 42. So I have always appreciated every step of the ladder that got me here. And I work harder now because I love the job so much. I'm doing everything I can to make sure I stay here. But I don't understand. I think of all the different little jobs that I did over the years that were not great jobs, glamour jobs, or anything like that, because you're just trying to get experience. I mean, it really bothered me. It bothered me a lot. I was talking at Channel 3 the other day with two people who were interns that became full-time people. And I said, I knew you guys were going to get full-time work here when you were interning. They said, why? I said, because you wanted it. The other people didn't.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.